You're listening to the Hidden Killers podcast with Tony Bruschi,
featuring attorney, guest, and former felony prosecutor Eric Fadis.
The trial of Chad Daybell is well underway, maybe to the halfway mark, maybe somewhere getting close. We'll have to see. But just more and more information coming out. A lot of it kind of feeling like a bit of a rerun of Lori Vallow, but there's some new nuggets in here. It's like a reboot years later with a somewhat new cast. And then, oh my gosh, I thought that actor was dead. No, they're back. Joining me to discuss, Eric Fadis, former prosecutor and defense attorney. I'm just going to open it up here because we've had another week of more testimony. We have expert witnesses coming in now as well. What's been standing out to you as this case continues to cluster on?
Yeah, you know, Tony, I was covering it yesterday for Court TV, and I was watching the testimony of two of Chad Daybell's neighbors. And so these people were, you know, appear to be pretty stand-up folks, pretty unimpeachable, just, you know, salt of the earth, normal people. And they detailed the lies that Chad Daybell repeated to them over and over. The audacious request for Chad Daybell, he went to his neighbor and asked the neighbor to put up the neighbor's house to post bond for Lori. And the neighbor was just, you know, taken aback. Chad, what are you talking about? And then the statements Chad made about whether Lori had children, the status of those children, whether they were still alive, all of those things were just a horrible look for Chad Daybell yesterday in court.
And I mean, does that right there just really kind of show how disconnected Chad Daybell is from reality? I mean, not quite as far as Lori, I think, you know, where she believes the children are working at the Costco in heaven now. But in terms of Lori, or in terms of Chad, you know, just thinking like, hey, these neighbors who I kind of know are willing to put their house up. I mean, that's something you may ask like a family member or something that you're really close to, but just your neighbors who are kind of like there, that, huh?
Totally. And at some point, Chad also asks if he could live with the neighbor. And the neighbors, you know, on the stand, you could see them. And they were really just sort of like flustered by these weird out of left field requests from their neighbor, Chad Daybell. And yeah, I think it shows a detachment from reality to a degree. But I think it also shows kind of an audaciousness, sort of he doesn't care about like pushing the envelope and about doing things that are self-serving, even if other people, you know, might raise an eyebrow or two. And he's kind of just willing to go after what he wants, even if it's viewed as unfavorable. And I think there are a lot of other similar actions he took in this case.
Yeah. What the hell's going on with John Pryor from a defense attorney standpoint? Because he just, is he doing a good job, or is he just kind of a cluster that really doesn't know what he's doing? Because I'm not a defense attorney. I know there's different tactics and different ways of doing this, but it just seems, you know, he's constantly being shot down and his arguments are just being shot down and rephrase it this way, rephrase it that way, sustain. It just goes on and on and on over and over and over. Is he trying to just create confusion at this point in time, or what is he doing?
Yeah. Viewing it, it's always easy for me, you know, the next day to say, oh, he should have done this or he should have done that. Mm-hmm. In the heat of battle, it's a little different.
Yeah.
But that being said, he's getting a lot of objections to his questions that are being sustained. He's sort of meandering sometimes during his cross-examinations. And he's asking questions that are perilous, that are reckless, where he doesn't really know the answer. He was asking the neighbors yesterday about, didn't Chad, when he was telling you about the custody battle, indicate that he thought the kids were still alive or something. And the neighbor was like, well, you know what? Chad really avoided any discussion about the kids. And so he started off with a question he thought was going to be helpful. And the answer just totally screwed his client in that moment.
There's been a lot of that. I would think if you're going to be asking a witness a question, you would have a reasonable expectation of what that answer would be. Does this just show that he's got nothing to work with?
You know, that could be. You kind of got to play the cards you're dealt, and he wasn't given the best hand on this one without question.
Yeah.
You got to try to get creative, be effective to the extent you can, but asking a question where you don't know the answer, unless the answer doesn't matter and can't hurt you, whatever they say, mm-hmm. it can't hurt you, you should not be asking the question either.
Yeah, I mean, it's been... It's been bizarre, to say the least. It almost feels, and there's no requirement. Like, he doesn't have to go up there for a certain period of time and beat the clock or something. But it feels like he's trying to fill time is almost what, and it's like, why? What are you doing? Maybe, like, less is more in something like this.
Totally, especially in cross-examination. Oftentimes, you want to get in and get out. You know, make your two or three big points and get the heck out of there before any more damage is done to your client. And then also, when we have this long, extended trial, you don't want the jury to feel like you're wasting their time. And because, you know, jurors are humans, and that could cause the juror to look unfavorably upon your client at deliberations. So, you know, some questionable moves by John Pryor, and he's in a difficult situation, no question.
He is. How much does it, how important is it that your attorney come across as likable to a jury versus John, who's just kind of feels like a doofus, that's putting it nicely.
Yeah, I think the likability factor cannot be overstated. As I've said before, these jurors are humans, man. And so, you know, if a person were making a decision at work, and like there's the coworker they really like that wants position A, and there's a coworker they hate that wants position B, it's just less likely they're going to side with position B. And that's the case in the deliberation room. And so the likability factor is key, I think.
Yeah, I mean, it comes down there. Everybody's human. And that's really what the reality is. Looking way down the track here a little bit to Lori's upcoming trial, anything that you've seen thus far in this trial that you think will affect that one or make any sort of impact in how that's going to maybe differ from the original Lori trial?
Yeah, Lori's already kind of made her bed, and she's been sentenced to life in prison for the murders. Now she has the subsequent trial coming up. You know, I'm thinking it's going to be mostly an afterthought. This is really kind of the main event, you know, Lori's trial and now Chad's trial. And so this subsequent trial for Lori, I'm just not sure how much it's going to matter in the grand scheme of things. Yeah. You know, it'll be a different subject matter. There's going to be some overlap. It'll probably be less about, you know, these far-fetched spiritualistic ideas. But we're in the main rounds now.
Yeah. It'll be kind of like a direct to VHS release. They don't even get Blu-ray. It's like, we're sorry, we're only putting this on VHS because we've done this too many times.
Beta. I think that's right.
Beta if they're lucky. But you got to look out for that.
Want to listen ad-free? Want advanced access to all of our interviews before anyone else?
Become a True Crime Today Premium Plus subscriber on Apple Podcasts.
You get every episode commercial free,
so you can binge on true crime
until you can binge no more.
Search True Crime Today Premium Plus on Apple Podcasts now, or go to our podcast page and sign up now.
More of the Hidden Killers podcast next.